Welcome to a very informal Chewing the Fat 178th episode of the Nerdstravaganza podcast, where we didn't come up with a topic, and we decided to just see where conversation would lead us tonight. I'm Tom.
I'm Brian.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Cam.
And it occurs to me, guys, that I probably shouldn't say tonight, just because we happen to record these at night, because some people probably listen during the day, in the morning, God knows when. I'm kind of time putting like a weird time spin on the episode, so remind me not to do that in the future.
I like it. I think it's personal.
Okay, yeah.
It's Aaron Knight. They're spending it with us.
Yeah. Grab a glass of warm milk.
Welcome to our home in the evening. Yes.
We need a crackling fireplace sound effect in the background.
Yes.
Where's my pipe?
I will remind our listeners that they can, of course, listen to us at any time. And we highly encourage them to rate us favorably and give us maximum stars on iTunes. We're also on Stitcher, but we are really appreciative of iTunes' attention. Thank you. And with that said, guys, let's do some weekly geekly action. And Chris, why don't you lead off, man? What have you been up to this week?
Well, I have been a reading beast this week. I finally caught up with some of my graphic novels I've been dying to read. We'll start off with the one that ends. Actually, All-Star Western finished its run of Jonah Hex. For those who don't know, Jonah Hex is the rough-and-tumble cowboy that usually gets into Weird West, which is usually supernatural or, you know, fantastical adventures. It was a really bad steampunk movie a few years ago, and that's not because I'm dissing steampunk. It was a really bad film. And it had so much promise with Josh Brolin as being Hex. But yeah, now it's for the sixth volume of the graphic set. Hex's story's done. I'm not sure if All-Star Western is getting canceled as well. I'm probably a bad geek for not, you know, rolling around and confirming that before getting on air. But, just to let you know, the pair of guys that did this, they were doing Jonah Hex before the New 52. And basically what was going to be All-Star Western was going to be Jonah Hex volume 2 of a set of trade paperbacks, and then they just kind of rolled it into the New 52. I'm really hoping that they come back with this because the stuff was great, very edgy, and also, you know, the art was always awesome. Speaking of awesome art, I also caught up some with the Mice Templar, which is this kind of like a Mouse Guard / Secretive Nim storyline, and the spin is that these mice are intelligent and they talk and they actually exist in our world, but they usually live in a separate spirit world that only is active at night. In fact, everybody has to go to sleep before sunrise or they might slip into the daylight world and then everyone else is on the other side of the veil and they're out by themselves in our harsh real world where there isn't much magic. And I liked what I saw with the second volume I'm reading. It gets more into the fantastical mythology of there being a spirit world. It almost makes our world look like their fairy realm, so to speak. Time runs differently. People can get in there and, you know, they're able to train at a faster rate than they could if they were, you know, traveling in their own world, which seems to run at a slower pace. I also read The Rat Queens, which is a really awesome, very tongue-in-cheek fantasy comic book. It's about four female adventurers, and pretty much every expectation is turned upside down. Let's see. The setup is there is an atheist cleric, a hipster dwarf, a hippie halfling, and a rockabilly elven mage. It's really funny. We're going to sit down and do rations. Well, the halfling took care of rations. What do we have for rations? We've got candy, and we've got hallucinogenic mushrooms. Thanks. Well, we're going to be tripping for dinner tonight. I mean, it's just crazy stuff like that. This week, I finished up the famous Kickstarter video game, Broken Age. There was a part 2 that came out. I kind of dragged my feet getting to it because I had raced my old copy thinking there were going to be two separate games, but they were one. And then for some weird reason, Steam popped up and found my old file, and I managed to finish it off, which is great. Which means now I'm starting to get into the director's cut of Wasteland 2, which is a graphic improvement because it went from Unity 4 to Unity 5 for the engine. And I found out why a lot of these games never get finished by me. I have a very bad habit of wanting to do, like, the pitch-perfect beginning. So I, like, stop and then load up a previous save. I do, like, 15 reloads trying to get the pitch-perfect beginning and trying to get the pitch-perfect team together to tackle the rest of this open-world adventure. So you can imagine how, if I don't get my act together and just dive in, I quit after about 2 days. Because I just, I'm like, no, I could go back and do this again one more time to get that extra piece of experience or that one piece of ammo I didn't see the first time I went by. And that's pretty much my geeky week.
Sounds pretty geeky to me, man.
Thank you. That is a compliment, right, on this podcast?
It is. It is indeed. Kind of the point of this update. Brian, what about you, man?
I'm probably going to step on Cam's toes here, but I'm actually really excited to have gotten in Grimagia, a card game that I had ordered. One of the only Indiegogos I've done, and the experience was just so very different from what I'm used to. I think Cam was in the same boat. I had pretty much written off the $50 because halfway through the production cycle, there was this update like, oh, everybody just quit. We're going on. Don't worry. And then there was another update like 4 hours later. Like, we didn't quit. That motherfucker fired us. What a cocksucker. Fucking asshole. Like, there was all kinds of drama throughout the entire thing. And
it wasn't looking good.
Yeah, it wasn't. And I don't, did you get to open yours yet or?
Yeah, I went through it. Looks pretty good.
I'm really impressed. It's much nicer than some stuff I've gotten.
Yeah, looks pretty good.
So,
I mean, it took a fucking year and a half, but I mean, it's,
at least we got it. I don't know how it plays. It looks a lot Yu-Gi-Oh-ish, which doesn't really please me, but I haven't played it yet, so maybe it's a twist on Yu-Gi-Oh that's better. I'm excited about that. I have been playing Star Wars Uprising, which I just don't even care about playing the game anymore. Just experiencing all the like strange bullshit that happens is fascinating to me. I think I mentioned on an earlier episode that I had played way, way more than any human should on one of the 24-hour, like, breakout events where the Star Destroyers come, and you have to fight them off, and there's a ladder, and the guys that rank higher get better gear, and all this kind of stuff. What happens is the number one player in the world gets cool stuff. The top 25 get not quite as cool stuff. Then I think it's the top 1,000. And then it's the top 2,000. So there's basically 4 or 5 scales, and it caps out pretty early. And then everybody else is just like, you participated. Yay. You don't get anything. Well, people were complaining about that, especially since the stuff you get is really amazing gear. So that just makes it that much easier to do well next time. What they did this last week is they completely changed the scale, so that the top 5 players got the best gear. And then they brought the low end even lower. So it was like the top 1,000 got something. And then everybody else was just screwed. Just screw you. So quite a mess. And I don't even play with people. I just run the solo missions, and I don't have a single friend on the game or anything like that. But listening to the people whine. And I got to give them credit where credit's due. The company that did it, I think, is Kabam. Their response was, look, we fucked this one up. Just wait till next week, okay? So the game is fun, but the drama that unfolds is amazing. Lastly, I've gone through something similar to Tom. I'm thinking about higher education again, or possibly a second track of education. I went to Miami-Dade, it's not community anymore, college with a friend to help him. I have no idea what I was supposed to be accomplishing, but his print heads were dirty, so he needed help cleaning them. And when I got there, it was like an industrial printing press that he meant he needed help cleaning.
Oh,
so,
wow.
Geez.
Yeah. Fun. But, God, I love being on a campus. I love that atmosphere. And I just love the, no one's talking about money on campus, at least in the arts department. Everybody's talking about their arts, their passions, the project they're working on. It's just so much fun. And I'm not doing anything else, so I'm thinking about going back for that.
Nice, man. So you think of doing an advanced degree, another bachelor's degree?
I have to see what is possible. I would dearly like my master's in creative writing.
Nice.
But I might actually do something starting over and just go the smart route. I might do something actually marketable instead of, you know, a passion.
There's something to be said for that. I'm laughing because it's such a sad delineation between the practical and the and that for which we can hold a passion. Although if you can muster passion for something practical, that's the ideal fit.
We'll see. I really enjoy the audio video editing that I do for the podcast. I might try to go pro with that, but I don't know. I wouldn't call it a passion.
Okay. Well, definitely look forward to hearing what you, on what course you decide. Anything else?
That's it.
Cool. So what about you, Cam, man? What you got going on?
You know, like Brian said, I got my Grimagia in as well, but I was so busy with other geeky stuff, I wasn't even able to really sort of go through it like I wanted to. I had the Maze Racers event at the Adventure Game Store this past Saturday, which was awesome. A bunch of people turned out and played the game and had a favorable response to it. So that was fun. I don't know if this would be geeky, but I went and saw a movie called Sicario. I guess it's sort of an indie kind of movie. I saw a movie called Sicario. Have you guys heard of that movie? It's not getting a lot of buzz. Yep. It didn't get a lot of like hype, but it's like now it's starting to gain a lot of traction because it's fucking amazing. It's like have you ever seen the movie Traffic?
Yeah.
With Don Cheadle and Kirk Douglas about the like, you know, drug war or whatever. It's like Traffic, but even grittier and darker, if that's possible. Yeah, it was awesome. And if you are a Benicio del Toro fan like I am, you will adore this movie. This was Oscar worthy performance from him, I think.
Ooh, okay. It's on my list.
So I would definitely say go see that movie if you're looking for some like just gangster shit. Like it was awesome. So I saw Sicario. I got in a bunch of other stuff. I got in my Coup Rebellion G54 Kickstarter. So looking forward to playing some Coup Rebellion with everyone. One Night Revolution also came out this week, but I had already gotten that at Gen Con. That sort of coincided with the Coup Rebellion. You know, they're in the same universe, so that's going to be some fun at the Adventure Game Store this week. Preparing still for the many cons that are coming up, Animate being the closest one out, then Metatopia in New Jersey, and then BGGCon in Dallas, which I will be going to. BGGCon, I'm super looking forward to. They started this last week. They started the virtual flea market, so you can go onto BoardGameGeek and list whatever games you want, and basically people bid on them or, you know, or just buy them outright, and you meet up at the con and, you know, swap games for cash or swap games for games or, you know, whatever you work out. My whole goal going into this year was to cull my game collection down from its ridiculous size. And I did really well at that. I've sold right now, I've sold about 20 games and I'm at about almost $600 in games that I've sold. So that's the good news. The bad news is I've purchased 35 games, and I've committed to about $1,100. So I'm still in the red about $500. But the silver lining is I still have about 40 to 50 games listed that I'm sure will sell or trade before the con. The con isn't until like the middle of November. So, this is sort of like a long ongoing process. I'm sure that, the majority of that stuff will sell. I am pretty excited though. I got some Grail games that I've been really looking forward to. Let's see. I got, a game called Here I Stand and another game by the same, producer called Successors, which are two really amazing games. I got a game called Shadow of the Elder Gods, which I've been looking for a while. I got a game called Glory to Rome, which is, I've been really wanting for a long time. I got a copy of StarCraft, which is the board game translation of the video game. So that's pretty exciting. I got a game, Scripts and Scribes, which is actually the precursor to Dr. Steve Finn's Biblios, which is, one of my favorite games.
That's like been out of print for years, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
It's been out of print for a very long time. So I got a copy of that and I got it for $10. So I'm pretty excited about that. Yeah, I got some serious value. Like I got, Glory to Rome, I got probably about $50 or $60 under current market value. StarCraft, I got for about $60 under market value. I got like every Cards Against Humanity. And I'm not even really a huge Cards Against Humanity fan. I just couldn't pass up the deal. I got like every core set expansion, big black box, whatever booster packs, everything for like $60, which is pretty ridiculous. And the two things that I got over the last 2 days, which are pretty amazing, is a game called Where There Is Discord. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of that, but that game is amazing. It's actually a one player game. You play by yourself basically. And, it is like, I think they only ever made like under 1,000 copies. And, I got a copy for about half a market, which is about $250 to $300. And I got it for less than half that.
Wow.
And then I got a copy of Axis and Allies with a couple of expansions. But the good thing about that is that it comes in this amazing box. I forgot the brand name right now, but it's a ridiculous box that the box is basically worth like more than I paid for the game. You know what I mean? So you guys better be ready for like an 8-hour Axis and Allies session.
Like the original, not like one of the smaller pared down versions that they released recently.
No, it is the original Axis and Allies. Yes,
love that game. That is my risk.
I'm gonna have to find my center when I play that game because it was one of the few games that actually gets under my skin.
Really?
Yeah, because I'll be playing it, and in one turn I'll be world conqueror, spreading myself obviously too thin, and the next turn I'm like holding on to like Lithuania.
Yeah,
and I'm
but
so
that's
pissed.
The fun of it.
And I'm so
that's
pissed.
The fun of it.
Ah,
yeah. That's why I like Game of Thrones so much too, is because you really gotta you gotta check yourself, man. You can't just be running out going crazy. You know what I mean?
Game of Thrones helps you check yourself. You can go apeshit in Axis and Allies.
Yeah. I got the original Axis and Allies. The guy, he even painted all the figures.
Wow.
And they look killer. I mean, he sent me a bunch of pictures. They look killer.
What?
And it comes with the World War II expansion. So it's like I got it for like $50. The box that it's coming in is worth more than $50, let alone the game and the expansion and the painted figures and all that stuff. So there are some serious values to be gotten on the Board Game Geek virtual flea market. So that's been sort of taking up my day. I'm literally on my phone all day because somebody will post something and then everyone jumps on it. You know what I mean? So it's like, you gotta be quick. I already missed one deal on StarCraft. Some guy sold StarCraft and the Brood Wars expansion for $100, which if you know anything about the StarCraft itself is probably like $150 game, even used. And he sold StarCraft and the Brood War expansion, which was new in Trink, for $100. So you're and the Brood War expansion is about $100. So for $100, you're getting $250, $300 in value of a game. I say value relative, with quotes in the air,
right?
Because, it's only worth what someone's going to pay for it, but if you can get your hands on a game like that for that price, I mean, it's amazing. So that's been my week, man. Just game, board games, board games. What else is new, right?
I mean, maybe the scale is new, Cam, in this case. Or...
yeah.
Oh, man. Awesome. Sounds like a pretty board gamey week for you, my friend.
Very much so.
I'm sure you'll end up turning a profit somehow on all this. You're a smart guy.
I will, and I will. The good news is, Tom, I will have all of these games right around the time you're back down here for game night.
Yeah. That'll be actually pretty soon, less than 2 weeks, I think. So awesome! Yeah. Looking forward to it. We're not gonna do any like highly historically accurate miniatures gaming, are we?
Absolutely not. Axis Analysis is probably the closest we're gonna get to anything.
Yeah, that's probably my upper limit. That, and if we could keep Agricola out of the mix forever, that would be fantastic.
Yeah, Agricola will never be on my shelf, I can tell you that.
I don't know a soul who likes that.
Ugh.
Well, I guess that one guy, but like,
yeah,
I think we ran him off.
Yeah, after that night, that guy never showed up again.
It takes a special breed of person to really get Agricola.
15th century German peasants?
No, they're really strong math guys, and it's just, ugh. And the thing for me is that anecdotally, the ones I bumped into, they really like Agricola, and they think you're an idiot if you can't play the game. It's like, to them, it's the easiest thing in the world because it's second nature to do all the stuff they do in the back of their head. So that's the thing that irks me, is just their attitude that you're an idiot if you don't know how to play Agricola.
It's not so much the knowing how, it's the knowing why to play.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're an idiot for wanting to play Agricola. How about that? You know, that's my response.
Like, I can see the appeal of having multiple threads going on. Like, you've got crops going on over here and a million other mini games that are kind of embedded within the main game, but they're all boring. Like, none of it's fun. It's like doing five not fun things at the same time.
The worst case guy that loved Agricola I bumped into, when social deduction games started becoming the thing, he would regularly, like, sabotage any and all of them because that was the complete opposite of his specialty. He was clueless in social deduction, and he hated it. He's like, are you lying? I can't tell. And he would just, like, literally find a way to sabotage everything so they could get back to playing anything. It was like, if you don't want to play Agricola, offer Werewolf to him, so then he would pretty much promise to do anything but Werewolf so we could not do Agricola. It was like that kind of bizarre bargaining to be done.
I can see the opposite end of the spectrum there for sure.
You know, I forgot to mention, speaking of games that like we hate, but like a game that I used to think that I would hate that I never played, and here's a, you know, teachable moment, I guess, you know, like, you know, don't judge a book or a game by its cover, I guess, was Power Grid. I always thought, like, I'll never play Power Grid. That fucking game looks like it's horrible. It's such a traditional Euro that I'm just not going to like it. Like, you know, whatever. Jenny at our game night, at the Adventure Game Store just bought the game actually because she loves it, and she wanted some people to play it with her. And I was like, all right, whatever, I'll give it a chance. I actually really liked that game. Have you guys played that game before?
Yeah. I have. I like it.
Yeah. If you haven't, Tom, I would say try it, man. It's actually pretty fun, man. It's a pretty good game.
You know, I had the same thing happen to me with a game called Carcassonne.
Carcassonne, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, because to me it was like, what, you're laying down tiles to make a landscape? A
little castle or...
Yeah, no, it's not even a little castle. It's like, here's a farm, here's a river, here's a town. And you're like, what's the big deal? And I played it, and it was, for me, I loved it. It's one of my favorites. I hardly ever get to play it, unfortunately. But yeah, it went from why would I even touch this to like being in like my top five of all time.
Nice.
I'll play it when we get back if you want. I'm looking forward to getting into some gaming. I know there's a lot of new stuff out there. So,
Brian, we got to get you into that game this week too.
Power Grid?
If you feel like playing it. And we got to do some Viceroy again too. I really like that game.
That was good.
I haven't tried that yet. I want to do that.
It's really good, dude.
Yeah, it's a really good game.
So anything else, Cam? Sounds like a pretty gamey update.
No, man. You know me. Gamey all the time in many respects, unfortunately.
Nothing wrong with that. Brings it around to me. Been kind of winding things down here in Seattle as I prepare to leave. I'm packing up, getting ready, trying to throw together a Wreck-It Ralph costume to wear to the Mickey's Not-So-Scary Halloween Party at Disney World and Disneyland.
Nice.
Actually, I think it's only called the Not So Scary at Disney World. I think it's just called Mickey's Halloween Party at Disneyland, but I'll confirm that. Should be cool. I am going as Ralph, and my companion is going as Vanellope, the little girl from the movie, which will make it weird if we kiss or anything. So,
yeah.
Gotta not do that. Yeah, looking forward to that. Apart from that, just trying to play a little more Bully and Fallout 2, just doing some old school gaming. And yeah, it's been a fairly uneventful week. Oh, I chanced onto a Ganondorf amiibo at Target. I happened to be in Target and they were unpacking a box. Like, we weren't even supposed to get these in. And I'm like, what are they? They're like, oh, these amiibo things. I'm like, I'll take one. So just on a whim, I bought another amiibo. I don't know if it's rare, hard to find, or nice. Anything. And I don't care. Also, Rick, who, of course, was a host of the show for a long time, is really getting me interested in Disney Infinity. Evidently, all of the toys for that game can be had at Toys R Us at very good prices. They're on like the third generation of that game, and so the 1 and 2 figures are available at bargain prices now, and God knows I need hundreds of new plastic figures and stuff and video games and forms of entertainment. I don't have enough to do. But God, I hope I don't take that plunge. We'll see. That might be for me what board games have been for you, Cam, lately.
Tom?
Yeah.
Tom?
Yeah. Yep.
Lego Dimensions.
No, don't bring that up too. Listen, this Toys to Life shit could end up being the biggest money sink for me if I let it get out of hand. You know, I don't need this. I don't need this in my life. No.
Well, if you prick your finger and a little plastic action figure pops out, we'll know you've gone too far.
That's true. Yeah, that's the sign. But yeah, other than resisting that urge, I've not been up to much besides getting ready to do my Disneyland to Disney World world tour. Well, North American tour. And looking forward to getting that kicked off. And speaking of kicking things off, we have got some news to get to. You know, since this is kind of a loosey-goosey, no particular topic show, feel free to conduct the news reporting in that manner. And who went first with tonight's update? Was that you, Chris, or was that Brian?
That was actually me.
Okay, Chris, then lead us off with some news, man.
Okay, I'm going to probably lead off with the news that excites me the most. Who's familiar with Robert Rodriguez, the director?
I am.
For sure. Yep.
He did Dusk Till Dawn. He did Desperado. He did The Good Sin City.
Grindhouse. That kind of
Grindhouse, stuff. That sort of stuff. James Cameron has picked him to finally do the Battle Angel movie. Battle Angel, Alta was an anime he was going to do until Avatar, like, totally obsessed him. So this has been, like literally decades in the waiting. So he has some strange subjects once in a while, but I like Rodriguez, so I'm looking forward to see what he does. Again, in the sometimes fiction is more bizarre than real life section, Witcher 3 now has a tax man that hunts you down if you do certain exploits, turning cheap trade items into gold. Like if you had hunted down cows and you managed to use an exploit to turn them into more gold, a tax man now hunts you down and looks for you. And tells you what you did, and tells you what the fine is.
Oh, so you're penalized for like just bottom feeding kind of farming?
If you found an exploit and you used it, once they get the patch for it, they send a tax man out to talk to you about it.
That's interesting.
This goes right along with that sort of news of the guy who exploited MMORPG has his avatar raced through the city naked and thrown into a bottomless pit and other crazy things that companies are doing to punish people who abuse their online privileges. And then in the last one, something that's a little closer to me, now that standing desks have been around, the data is now finally in. Standing desks aren't really more or less bad than sitting desks if you aren't physically active. If you're physically active, they can help you a little bit more, but honestly, there's no real difference, which now means I need to find a taller chair because I do a lot of standing desk stuff.
I mean, if it's comfortable for you and you enjoy it and it encourages you to move around a little more, there's nothing wrong with it, but I'm not really surprised to learn that, you know, sitting isn't the killer that they thought it was. If you look at all of our primate relatives, they don't spend all day standing around in the jungle.
This is true. This is true.
I think Apollo said it best, nothing in excess. Sitting on your ass for 8 hours is bad for you. Anyone who's ever worked retail knows that standing still in one spot for 8 hours is just as bad for you.
Right.
Like, it's about sit for a little bit, stand for a little bit, walk around for a little bit, sit for a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's like common sense to me. I don't really buy that standing every day, 8 hours a day. I mean, it may not be detrimental, but I don't buy that that's necessarily great on your skeleton, on your feet, on your back, etc. Yeah, I think a variety of activity. Again, I'm not a medical professional, and we're not dispensing any kind of medical advice here. But, yeah, what Brian says makes total sense to me.
I think there's science to back you up, Tom.
I hope so.
Science!
So sorry, I mean, you know, keep using your standing desk if you want, man. Don't let this news dissuade you.
Yeah, I'm going to have to sit down for that bit.
Good one. Let's see, any other news?
No, that's it.
All right. Brian, what about you, man? You got some news?
Man, I got some rough news this week. I just been in a mood or something. I'm attracting it. I've joked about this. I think we're all aware of it, but the study came out. Miami's done for. New Orleans is done for. If we healed the climate damage tomorrow, it's too late. Those cities will be underwater within 20, 30 years, 50 years, and there's just nothing we can do about it.
Well, all the more reason to do absolutely fucking nothing, if you'll pardon my French.
I am intrigued, though, because I was actually talking about this at Miami-Dade with my friend, and someone brought up the idea. There is so much money in Miami.
Yeah.
They're not just going to like, let's move. They're going to turn it into like a Venice.
Yeah. The South Florida archipelago is going to have all these waterways. And yeah, you're right. Yeah.
And I hate to be, I don't know, unrealistic, but I'm kind of excited about that. That's going to be really cool until we all drown. I mean, it's going to look awesome for like 5-10 years.
Yeah, I'm kind of inclined to agree with you on this one, Brian. I don't think we'll see full abandonment of the area. It'll be maybe a playground for the wealthy who can afford to live on these remaining fingers of land and what have you. But yeah, it's pretty sad that even in the wake of that, we still won't do shit about climate change.
I mean, we're really talking about a major U.S. city disappearing from the map in our lifetimes. And people just, no, I don't believe it. They just don't believe it.
No shit, man.
Because, no evidence. Yeah. What's your evidence? I don't think so. That's right. Not evidence. Nuh-uh!
You're not exaggerating. A distant friend, basically a friend... How do I put this? A member of a family that was friends with my family going way back, she posted some stuff on Facebook the other day. Or actually, it was when the Democrats were having their national debate. What was that? Last night now, so everybody knows when we're recording this. And, you know, one of her comments was, climate change, blah, blah, blah. Move on to something that matters or something ridiculous like that. And I just, like, I want to reach through the internet and slap the shit out of people. It's so annoying.
I don't remember if it was on air or after the episode, but we were talking about the cheap Orlando property recently.
Yes.
Dude, time to act on that. It's going to be waterfront in a few years.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus, that's fucking sad to consider, isn't it?
You know, in a way, I almost see this as history repeating itself for Miami area.
I mean, they'll build a seawall. I mean, I'm not too worried.
Well, what about Stiltsville?
Yeah, but I mean, that was a much smaller area. I mean, you're talking about the entire Miami Beach waterfront, Fort Lauderdale Beach waterfront. I mean, that's like thousands. I mean, that's like not thousands, but like hundreds of miles. You know.
Yeah. For those who don't know, Stiltsville was a little, how can I put this? It was a little enclave of buildings on stilts that was out away from the beach. You can still see them now, but they're in the protected bay. So there's like special rules that once they get to 50% deterioration, they can't be rebuilt because there's this organization that's trying to save it. The organization, most of them are kind of based off the people where the families used to use it as like little family party barbecue places. But back in the day, it was more of a little mini Las Vegas out there where the rich and affluent would go out and party from the prying eyes of anybody on shore. So.
Well, now they don't have to hide. So.
Exactly. But who knows? I mean, yeah, for 20 years, Miami may be a really cool new Las Vegas.
So you're saying the history repeating itself may be people living in stilt houses over the water?
Yeah, exactly. Or stilt condos. Exactly. That's where I was going with that history repeating itself, because I was thinking of Stiltsville.
Yeah, we'll see. Damn, I mean, I hope there's a lot of problems that are going to come in South Florida with sea level rise. The source of fresh water will be one of the biggest problems, because the Everglades will be completely full of salt water if that happens. So,
let me just go off on another rant here. The Everglades, which are the only environment of its kind on the planet,
yeah,
will be covered with salt water. I mean, just absolutely destroyed by the most common thing on the planet. And we're just like, whatever.
What do you want to do about it, Brian? Kill jobs? Are you one of those commies out to kill jobs? Is that your problem? You want to ruin the economy? I don't want to get political, but goddamn, this is a... All right. We're shooting the shit, so maybe we can, but... Oh, God. Right, news. So, Miami's done. Other low-lying cities are doomed. Anything else?
God, it gets worse. Everyone talks about Stephen Hawking, the genius cyborg mathematician, and his ominous warnings. How he said, like, look, maybe we don't want to find alien life. They might not like us. Look, maybe we don't want to double technology every year. We might take over. He's come out this week. Did you guys hear this?
No.
Nope.
Capitalism is a bigger threat than artificial intelligence enslaving us all.
Oh, wow.
Well, I mean, I think that's already come true. Just look at Black Friday.
Yeah.
How people act on Black Friday.
What was his, was there more, obviously there's more reasoning behind that. Did he have like reasons why he feels that's the case, Brian, or?
Here it is. In his own words, if machines produce everything we need, the outcome will depend on how things are distributed. Everyone can enjoy a life of luxurious leisure if the machine-produced wealth is shared, or most people end up miserably poor if the machine owners successfully lobby against wealth distribution. So far, the trend seems to be toward the second option, with technology driving ever-increasing inequality.
That's horrifying, but I totally see it. You know, as we automate more and more of, well, everything, you know, are people now left with more leisure time and money to spend, or are they left unemployed?
Well, no, they're left starving. I mean,
right. Okay. So, yeah,
they're left greeting people at Walmart for pennies
and, you know, writing for a penny a word. Whoops. I shouldn't have said that, but
you know, I still say there is some kernel of truth to my crackpot theory. We've made automated workers. We're making automated CEOs. We need to make automated consumers and then just turn humanity into stockholders of economy 2.0.
But the thing about that is CEOs don't fucking contribute a thing. So there's no need to automate it.
And well, you could argue that they steer the rather unwieldy ship of a corporation, Brian, but the broader point is, I should say another point I will make is, Chris, you talk about everybody being shareholders in this new automated economy. Well, that's the former case that was described, where we sit down as a race and decide and decide on something controversial, like guaranteed minimum wage or whatever they call it for everybody.
Guaranteed income.
Yeah, guaranteed income or something.
Yeah, like yeah, guaranteed minimum income or something like that. Good luck selling that to the people who currently are owning and creating the means of automation, because they see the wealth generated from those means of automation and production as the fruits of their labor. And who are you to come and say, hey, give me a share?
Good luck selling that to the populace who thinks you don't deserve a fucking Band-Aid if you've been shot.
Yeah, I don't.
Well, I said, you know, maybe if you say stockholder instead of employee, I don't know. I'm just saying, I know it's a crazy out there idea and that the devil's in the details. So, but I'm saying somewhere in there, there is a spin on that that has something to it. But it would be wiser minds than I to actually. And on top of that, it is much harder to tear down a really crazy, vague idea than to actually dig in and say, how could we make it potentially work?
Oh, yeah. I'm definitely, I mean.
And I'm not offended. You guys are completely right. It's not like, oh, you guys are, you know, I'm just saying there's something in there. It's just.
I'm not for tearing it. I mean, I'm not necessarily tearing it down, Chris. I think now and in the future, we're seriously going to have to take a look at wealth distribution. I won't use the dirty word redistribution necessarily, but I don't know what it's going to take for us to take a serious look at that. Cam, you're the bourgeois, unapologetic, capitalist, slave master. What do you think about all this?
You know, I mean, look, there's no easy answers. I'll be a politician and I'll say that. But you know, the problem that comes with this, like, guaranteed income and whatever the term that they're using is that the person that's generating that income then has no incentive to do so.
Uh-huh.
So if I'm going out and I'm spending, you know, I'm investing my money, you know, I've got $100,000 in the bank and I'm putting that $100,000 into the economy to generate $200,000 or $500,000 or whatever it is. But then you're taking that income from me, or a great portion of that income, and then distributing it to other people who aren't doing anything or taking any risk or doing any work, then what's my incentive to do anything? Why would I put my money at risk? Why would I go out and work hard every single day when I know I can just sit home and get a check? So it doesn't work on its face. It doesn't work. You know what I mean? It's like there's no such thing as a perpetual motion machine, because someone needs to create the motion. And if you don't provide the, you know, incentive for that motion, then the whole system collapses. So I think there needs to be a happy medium. I mean, I think people that need help should get help, but those, you know, it's very hard to define who needs help and who doesn't, without alienating or pissing somebody off. That's why politicians shy away from doing it. They want to give everything to everyone, but of course that's not possible either. I mean, I think we need to, I mean, there's going to come a point, especially when Social Security runs out, and especially when we get to the point where the welfare state is at the point where it can no longer sustain itself, that we're going to have to make some hard choices. But I wasn't thinking about that. I was looking at listing my house because I'm going to move away from Miami before it's underwater.
And Cam, all of your points are completely valid. Trust me.
I wonder, though, if that's a matter of perspective, because you say the person who generates the income isn't incentivized to continue doing that if he doesn't reap the benefits, minimum wage workers still do it every single day.
Yeah, but I mean, look, they have nothing at risk. They go to work because they need to pay their bills. I'm talking about like a small, medium business owner. I'm not talking about like a wage earner. I mean, if you go in and you do a job and you get paid, well, yeah, that's one thing. I mean, I'm talking about like the people that stimulate the economy, really stimulate the economy, which are the small, medium, and large businesses that create the jobs that pay the minimum wage.
I guess it's just perspective though, because the people who create the impetus get fabulously wealthy, and the people who labor every single day to get by. I mean, people joke down here that, you know, there's like 14 families to a house. There has to be.
See, I don't agree with that. I mean, I you know, like the whole like well, I have to work a minimum, you know, I have to work a minimum wage job just to get by. That's not true. I mean, maybe you have to do that for a certain time period, but anyone can better their life. You don't have to be a genius to be well off in this country. You don't have to be, you know, an Einstein. You can better yourself by being disciplined in your fiscal practices. You can better yourself by, going to school while you're working. Anything worth anything in this world takes work. I might sound like a, like, harsh bastard, but if you're on the lower scale, like, it's probably because you're not working hard enough. And we sort of talked about that before. I think, Brian, like, it's okay if you don't want to do that. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's okay if you don't want to go out and work a 60-hour work week or 70-hour work week or work 40 hours a week, go to school at the same time, do this, that, or whatever. But then don't complain that you don't have the new iPhone. You know what I'm saying?
Or healthy food for your children.
Yeah. Well, no, that obviously, like I said, and that's why I said it's important that, you know, in defining who's in need is important. I mean, if there's a family out there and the husband can't find work, wife can't find work, whatever, I get that. You need a hand up. That's fine. I don't have a problem with a hand up. I have a problem with a handout.
I think most reasonable people share that sentiment, Cam. But I think what Brian's maybe kind of getting at is that things seem to have gotten a little bit out of hand in terms of distribution of wealth throughout the economy. Consider this Seussian example of a bunch of cute furry creatures living on an island, and they're all equal stakeholders in the island's wealth, right? So they're all chilling, and nobody needs anything. They're all provided for. They're all 100% okay. But they want entertainment. So one enterprising little furball builds a theater and invites his fellow furball friends to come for a nominal fee. So they all pay him money. You then get inequality, right, financially, because now he has the fees collected for those tickets and all the little furballs are poorer that fee, right? If you want capitalism to work, you have to accept some inequality, right? Somebody's going to have money, somebody's going to have less. That's money moves back and forth as people transact business. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people's perception now is that one furry creature like owns everything on the island, you know, and everybody else is on the other side of the island with no trees and no food, or it's getting that way. It's getting very unequal.
Well, let me make two points as to that. One, I don't think it's getting more unequal. I think it's been unequal since the beginning of time. I mean, think about like back in the days with the serfs and the peasants. And for that matter, the slaves. I mean, there, you want to talk about 1%. It was probably less than 1% that controlled all the wealth back then. And now there is upward mobility. There is a quote unquote middle class. There is a chance to like better yourself and to better your economic or whatever position. So like the 1% and things are getting bad and that wealth is concentrated in, you know, whatever, you know, only certain people's hands. That's a very sexy argument or a very sexy, like, you know, media ploy and a very, very easy cry to make when things aren't going the way that you want them to go or things aren't like the way that you think that they should be. But if you take a long view of history, you can't tell me that it's worse now than it was 100 years ago or before, you know what I'm saying? So it's not getting worse. It's gotten way better and it's getting even more better because as the matriculation of time goes on, the wealth is because of the tax laws in this country and because of the like estate tax laws and that kind of stuff. The wealth is being redistributed, at least if not like, you know, in the way that people would want it to be. It is, you know, you don't have these like what I'm saying is the era of the dynasty is sort of going away. You know, these big Rockefellers and Dukes and you know, Vanderbilts and stuff like that. They're fossils. They're relics. Now you have the new money, like the nouveau riche, I guess. I mean, and that's sort of been around for a while now. Like, you know, the hedge fund manager is now like the Rockefeller, you know, these guys that have come up and they've made money within the last 10, 20, 30 years. And a lot of those people are guys that are just like you and me, you know what I mean? They just went out and they did something. And the second point would be that like you hit the nail on the head, Tom, when you said that inequality is a fact in capitalism. But my answer to that is inequality is a fact in life. You know, if you've read The Bell Curve, the book The Bell Curve, or even if you just go outside and look, just look around, I mean, you're going to have people that are on one end of the spectrum and you're going to have people that are on the other end of the spectrum. No matter what you do, whether it's intelligence, whether it's, work ethic, whether it's productivity, it doesn't matter. Not everyone can be a king and not everyone is going to be poor. I think the better exercise is to try to get it to a better mix of distribution. And I'm not against that, but so I'm not saying that there shouldn't be more quote unquote equality, but what I am saying is I don't think getting there, a good way of getting there is just saying, well, hey, you've got more money than I do, so you should give me some.
Well, okay, I agree with you, actually. I don't like confiscatory policies or even policies that seem to be confiscatory in nature. But I think we're at a...
Well, and
go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I think we're at potentially a critical juncture, and I think maybe that's what Hawking was alluding to. Already sure. The 20th century was way better than the, 10th century. I mean, slavery existed for most of human history. A lot of horrible things we've done away with. But our standards are also a little higher. And I think empirically you can show that the average working person is worse off today than they were half a century ago. Like, there has been the middle class has definitely lost its standing somewhat, and that's what irritates people. And at this time when it seems like the money's piling up at the top, we're entering into an era of increased automation where, the folks who can, I sound like a Marxist when I say this, the folks who control the means of production are going to, have even more, they're going to have sort of, kind of like a force multiplier in the form of these, of automation and access to worldwide distribution, all this kind of stuff, such that they will have, much more leverage than the working class has when it comes to negotiation for salary wages, et cetera. We already see that with globalization, right? So take capitalism into a highly automated future, and what do you have? A few theater owners on the island and a bunch of peasants. I think that's the fear he was expressing. And maybe that's what Chris was, that's why Chris was proposing like a stakeholder economy for the future or something like that.
Right. No. And I get that, but I acknowledge that Hawking is probably the smartest guy on the planet or smartest guy in the last, whatever since Einstein, but stick to science, dude. Like, I mean, the guy's been out of like any kind of like tax, any of our tax brackets for a long, long time. You know what I mean?
Sure.
It's easy for him to say capitalism is going to ruin everything when the guy's got no, the guy's a multi-millionaire. You mentioned globalization in terms of the, manufacturing industries and automation and all that stuff. Yeah, like that is where the world is going. That's where the world has been going for quite a long time. Either you're stupid or you're blind or you are intentionally not looking at the world if you don't know that or you don't realize that and you haven't known that for quite a long time. And the country needs to do that to stay a global economic power. You know, we can't just prop up a certain sector of the population because we want them to keep having a job at the risk of being inefficient and lagging behind globally when it comes to, our gross domestic product or gross national product, whatever. What I'm saying is we can't be inefficient just because there are some people that are going to get hurt because of that. And I'll point out like the debt crisis and I'll point out the automotive crisis, a few years before that. We lagged, there were tons and tons of Americans, good people, good Americans that I feel really bad for. And I think they got a raw deal that lost their jobs because of the, you know, car industry going out of business because, you know, they were mismanaged. That doesn't mean that the government should step in and say, well, we're going to give these people money, so they can keep you employed. It's creative destruction. Same thing with the banks. I fully, to this day, think that we made a huge mistake bailing out the banks, and we're going to end up paying the price for it down the road. Yes, it would have hurt a lot of people. It would have hurt me. You know what I mean? It did hurt me. The debt crisis did like cause a big problem for me and my business and my, you know, own personal wealth and standing or whatever. But you know what? Like, I fucking made that mistake and I own it. You know what I mean? And I tailored my business and stuff to correct that. And I'm in a, you know, decent position today. But you know what I'm saying? Like, it's only because I adapted to what was happening in the economy. And a lot of people just can't do that or aren't willing to do that. And I dare say that it's more of the latter. They're not willing to do that. They've been doing something for 20 years and they just don't want to change. And we as a country should not have to pay for that. So if you want to rail against capitalism because of that, okay, fine. I mean, I respect everyone's opinion, but at the same time, like, it doesn't make a lot of sense. You need to be able to adapt. There's, you know, I probably am coming off as a cold-hearted asshole, but there's going to be people that are going to be left behind. That you can't please everyone. And you have to do what's best for the country, and people either need to keep up and adapt, or they're going to be left behind.
You think maybe we could have, like, used those golden parachutes to feed the people that went homeless?
For sure, for sure. And that's part of it. That is part of it. Like, I'm totally on the side of anyone that thinks that there needs to be a change, especially in Washington DC. I lived there for 3 years. I went to law school there. It is a corrupt, shitty town. That is where there needs to be a house cleaning done. There needs to be, campaign finance reform, true campaign finance reform, not just lip service that, you know, both sides say that they're doing something just so that they can, you know, please their constituents. There needs to be term limits. There needs to be a reduction in actual term, like term time. There's no reason that anyone should be a senator for 30 years. There's no reason that anyone should be a congressman for 30 years. You should be no more than, you know, between 4 and 8 years at the most. And then that's it. You're gone. Because once you get entrenched like that, that's it. You're only doing what's best for yourself and for the interests that you're serving. And I think that is where a lot of the blame should lie. It's not a corporation's fault for doing what it is meant to do. A corporation, by definition, is a conglomeration of interests, basically people coming together to create profit and create wealth for themselves. You can't allow that in your economy and then tell it, don't do that. Or do it, but we're going to put this fucking 80-pound weight around your neck and make it not worth it for you to do it. What you need to do is go to the politicians and tell them, well, look, instead of spending fucking hundreds of billions of dollars to bail out these banks that fucked themselves over and fucked over the country, that money needs to be allocated to be retraining these workers that are now out of work because the banks are going to go out of business because they fucked up. You know what I'm saying? Like, the allocation of what happens because of these issues is the problem, not the actual, I guess, capitalism as a, you know, in theory.
Yeah, I mean, I...
Hey, guys.
Yeah.
I'm sorry I said anything.
No, this is good. We wanted
to... Well, fuck it. We didn't have a topic anyway.
Christ, I wish more people would talk like this.
We wanted to have a shooting the shit episode, and I think... We've been succeeding. I love this subject.
This is going to be exhibit Z in my reason why I'm never going to be a Supreme Court justice.
I think two of the issues we have that we define what the middle class is way too wide a band. It's gotten very confusing what middle class is. And I think that muddles the conversation, especially for politicians who want to take advantage of it. For example, from what I've seen and read in studies, middle class can encompass everybody from the police or nursing supervisor all the way to millionaires who run rather large, quote-unquote, small businesses. And when you have a gap that wide and a variety of interests and cultures that wide, it's much different than like being way on one end or one or on the other, you know? The impression I've gotten is, you know, I think who was it that said that in America, the reason why Marxism doesn't work is because the poor and the middle class don't see themselves as being used by the rich. They see themselves as temporarily embarrassed millionaires.
Yeah. I forgot who that quote was from, but yeah, that's a well-known quote.
Indeed. And I think it's because the lower end of the middle class wants to claim middle class because they want a little bit of that, you know, they don't want to feel like they're poor. They're working hard, you know, that sort of thing. And then the upper end has this mythology in their head that they aren't rich. They're middle class because they have to actually call in and babysit. They just can't drop everything and go to Aruba completely responsibility free. So in their head, they must be middle class. When most of those people probably need a little reality check. No, you aren't middle class. You are rather well off to do. Just you're not stupid wealthy. Or as like somebody said, Shaq O'Neal, he's rich. The guy who signs Shaq's checks, he's wealthy. But yeah, some of it is a matter of perception of what the middle class is. The other one is risk. To make more money, you need to be able to take risk. But if you don't have much to risk, or what you have isn't, you don't feel you can safely risk it, then you can't participate in those risky schemes that can net you more wealth. And what is it? Like business 101 is your risk is directly proportional to your profit. So basically, the more riskier the adventure, the more it has a potential for profit. And of course, what does everybody do in the real world? They try to find a way to get around that rule, to find a way to minimize the risk and make the most profit for it. Ended up somewhere in a happy medium. Or as I like to say, everyone wants to be the second person in line for a great idea. They don't want to be the first person with that great idea because that person has taken the risks. Once it's proven, everybody wants to be the second person in line to make money off that gig.
The second mouse gets the cheese.
The first mouse gets the trap. Right. That's it. I haven't heard that one before. That's good.
You're better off being a bank. That way you can...
being the trap?
Yeah, you got no fucking worries. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, you could just... Oh, gee whiz, you know, thanks for the deregulation. Thanks for letting us take all these people's deposits and do crazy shit. But yeah, we kind of screwed up at the casino. We need a bailout. Mm-hmm. No problem. We got your back, banks.
Those motherfuckers are still going after people that like defaulted on their home loans, the bad loans that they made.
What?
Yeah, I think banking is like, at least as evidenced in our response to this last big, you know, bailout thing that we did. Give me a break. Like, okay, so, you know, Bank XYZ was making questionable loans to all these people, and then we went and bailed them out. Well, as far as I'm concerned, then those people's loans get written down, you know, to whatever the homes are actually worth or written off or something. I mean, there's got to be...
Yeah, they're double dipping, these motherfuckers.
Right.
That's exactly what they're doing.
Right. Like, okay, I'm a person, I bought a place I could afford, and I could afford it for what I bought it for, but what I bought it for, it's still not worth, even though it's come back in value, it's still not where it was when I bought near the peak. Now, I'm not an evil speculator. Mm-hmm. I wasn't looking to get rich. I was buying a place... unfortunately, near the peak of the housing bubble. Where's my write down? Where, you know, who's writing to my rescue to say, you know, you're a hapless victim. Your place mm-hmm. is really only worth this. We're going to forgive the loan down to that level so that you're at, you know, you're not underwater anymore. No, nobody, not a single person to ride to my rescue. And I'm the good guy. I've done nothing wrong, right?
Yeah. And not even out of the kindness of their heart, but because the government has given us money to remedy the situation, with your tax dollars. And so now we're giving a little, you know, we're fixing the situation for you. No, we're just going to take that money that you've already paid. And now we're going to take more money and try,
right. Like,
you know,
who sat down and did this deal with the banks? Like the banks come walking in from a crazy night in Vegas and they sit down, you know, in front of the government and say, we're broke. We really need money. And then our guy couldn't have been like, okay, but you got to like you got to do right by the people you loan money to. No, like, did we have like just a complete stooge bargaining on our side? When I say our side, I mean the government side.
Well, that's where it goes back to what I was saying about the politicians. We didn't have a stooge. We had a very savvy guy that was looking out for himself that said, all right, well, yeah, we'll cut you a sweetheart of a deal. But, you know, and guess what? When my reelection campaign comes up, guess who's giving me $200 million, you know, $100 million or whatever.
Jesus.
Or guess who's giving me a fucking seat on their corporate board when I'm no longer a politician.
you're right. Yeah.
With one of Brian's golden parachutes. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, that's just how it works.
And the bitter truth of it, which most people don't want to hear, it was politicians on both sides of the fence.
Oh yeah. Because
that was put together before Georgie left, but then it was approved on the other side. So I'm just always thrilled on Facebook where you bring that up and everybody points at the enemy and it's two different people, you know. It's like, no, they were all involved, guys.
Oh, that whole misguided, it was a combination of sort of on one side, you know, cozying up with the banks, and then on the other side, oh, everybody deserves a home, you know. So it was both sides of the aisle, maybe for different ideological reasons, pursuing this ludicrous notion that people who really weren't in a financial position to finance a home for 30 years should be just given a loan for shits. You know, I'm not against people owning homes. I think it's a great thing. But, you know, if you're not financially sound, not the best idea, and neither the government nor banks, you know, with implicit guarantees of, you know, protection from the government should be extending loans.
Tom, getting a home, getting that half acre and that car has been the economic engine of the United States since World War II ended. This has gone all the way back to getting those GIs more educated, getting them a home, and getting the economy started. And that's been the tradition. No one has thought of it. In fact, you know, in the last half of Bush's, you know, administration, I had a real estate expert talking to me once, and he said, I know what's going on, and I'm retiring because I can see that the government is using the housing industry yet again, as they do over the years, as a crutch to prop up the economy. So it's just that's like everybody was on automatic pilot as things kept getting crazier and crazier, because it's always about, we got to do that American dream, we got to get that home, we got to get that car. And then what are the two things that crashed? The automotive industry, right, and the mortgage industry. And
no, homeownership definitely is good for America.
I'm not arguing that. I'm not.
the banking industry is not.
Yeah, I keep using the casino analogy, but it's seriously like me owning a casino and saying, well, listen, you know, I employ thousands of people and, you know, people come here for their entertainment. You know, I'm too big to fail. I can't really fail Nevada. So if somehow I should like, you know, run my casino poorly and you know, lose everything to my, maybe I'm not the casino owner, maybe I'm the gambler going into the casino, but point being, you know, listen, I'm a high roller and I need my money because with my money I also run several businesses and I pay people, so I'm too big to fail, so back up my casino my trips to Las Vegas so that I don't have to lay off the people who work for me in my grocery store chain. Like, that those were the kind of threats they were making, right? But they're making those threats in aggregate. Like, hey, you know, if you let us fail, the whole economy goes down with us.
Mm-hmm.
Which, again, I might be wrong, but there's X amount of, you know, X bazillion dollars on the ledgers of these banks versus X bazillion dollars that could have just been distributed in the form of writing off the loan. So if either way you eliminate the bad debt from the system, why does it matter whether you do it on these banks' balance ledgers or on my personal one? Like, just obliterate my loan or write it down, and then there you go. Yeah, your bad debt's gone. Don't worry about it. I mean, I don't understand the intricacies there, but that seems like it could have worked just as well.
Yeah, they took a credit, but they didn't
credit
make a corresponding debit. Exactly.
Right.
they took a credit and then they kept your credit, basically.
Yeah, that's what I don't understand. That doesn't make any sense.
Oh, it makes perfect sense. It's just fucking shitty.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They just saw a fucking cash grab and did it.
Here's what I'm going to do. Next time a hurricane rolls into town, I'm just going to, like, report my car destroyed, but then keep my car that's not destroyed and expect the insurance company just to write me out a check.
Yeah, I mean, that's essentially what they did.
Jesus. Oh, God. And not only that, then I'm going to go after, I don't know, I'm going to go sue somebody to get, like, the damage from my... I'm going to sue the weather forecaster or something to, you know, fix the paint on my car because he didn't predict the storm correctly or something. You know, I'm going to somehow find a way to make more money off of the deal.
Yeah.
Bad analogy, but I can't really find another one that actually makes any kind of sense.
No, I get what you're saying. I mean, that's just what they're doing, man.
Oh, God. So we talked about politics. I guess religion would be the next forbidden topic, and then we'll lose all of our listener base.
Exactly.
I'm not religious. I'll say that. There. We could leave it at that.
So for our final podcast.
You're spiritual.
Oh, God. Man, okay, what does that mean? All right, look, this isn't going to offend anybody who's necessarily of a particular denomination, but... It's usually, and this is, okay, here I go being sexist, but I usually hear it from women. I don't hear a lot of guys say this, but women say this. I'm not religious. Don't get me wrong. I don't subscribe to religion, but I am spiritual. And this is hardly a new observation. I think comedians have been talking about this for 30 years, but none of them have come to a satisfactory conclusion for why people say this. What the fuck does that mean?
They just don't want to go to church.
Okay, neither do I, but I don't.
Yeah, you go. You're spiritual.
I don't want to go to medical school, so I don't say, like, I'm not a doctor, but I believe in medicine.
I'm holistic.
Right. I'm not a scientist, but, you know, I believe in the scientific method. Like, I don't feel the need to profess some subscription to a set of ideas.
I'm not a gynecologist, but I'll take a look.
Yeah, exactly. I'm no auto mechanic, but bring the vehicle in.
I think
it is
for a lot of people that they want to have some religion or some spirituality in their lives, but pretty much every church they go to doesn't subscribe to their particular beliefs.
So then don't bother.
Since we're pissing off listeners, what they mean is that they have their beliefs and it doesn't match with any church going organization, so they just do their own fucking thing, which is fine, but just call it that.
But what are they, like, what are their beliefs, like, in your experience, Brian? Like, the spiritual meaning what? You believe in, like, magic or something? Like, what are you saying to me when you say you're spiritual?
I have seen this, and I'm not saying this is every case, so no one get mad at me. It is one case. Someone was Wiccan.
Oh, boy.
Which is a religion, which worships their icons, deities, whatever you want to call it. There's a hierarchy in Wicca. And they were just like, but I'm an atheist.
What?
You're an atheist Wiccan? Yeah. Then you're not Wiccan. I mean...
Right. I mean, you believe in magical spirits and miracles and... Like, if you believe in the super...
I mean, if you want to say you believe in magic, just say you believe in magic. That doesn't make you a Wiccan.
Right, but... can an atheist believe in magic? Can an atheist believe in spirits, ghosts, and magic, too? I wonder about that. Like, I thought atheism, by definition, it's the lack of belief in... You have, there's no theism in your life. You know, you don't believe...
Well, the literal definition of atheism is... disbelieves or lacks belief in the existence of God or gods.
Oh, so you can believe in witches.
Ghosts are not. And... Yeah, I guess.
Oh, Jesus. I mean, you're still an idiot if you... Sorry. Ooh, no, you're not an idiot. I don't believe in any of that stuff. And if you believe in that stuff, I don't agree with you. There. You're not an idiot, though. I don't mean to call you names.
It is... I don't know. It's a code word for, I was raised Catholic.
What, the spiritual thing?
Yeah.
It's a code word for I'm ex-Catholic?
Yes, exactly. I was raised Catholic. I secretly believe everything my parents taught me because that's how human beings work, but I don't like it now, so.
I like the feeling of being like spiritually superior, but I don't want to do, I don't want to follow all the rules. So, yeah.
I just want to make one point, which is I don't think any of us here think anyone else here is a fucking idiot or a moron or is.
Dude, it's all right if you disagree with us, man. Don't feel
exactly. That's my point. We all disagree with each other, but we all respect each other and we think we're all smart guys and we're all friends. And that's okay compared to this BS on the internet and the Facebook where anyone who doesn't agree with each other. And maybe I'm being naive that, you know, because everyone just wants to shoot down a stranger. But, you know, that's a point I want to make is just look, hey, politicians, hey, internet, intelligent people can disagree and bullshit all day and enjoy each other's company.
Yeah, I mean, I was totally serious when I said, like, I wish more people would talk like this. Like, that's how people find accord.
I have a bottle in my hand, and I wish I could give you guys a salut. Machayim. I toast you all. So I'm a creative person who happens to come from a redneck part of the country. My Facebook, I get it from both. I get the idiocy from both ends. All fucking day.
I know we joked about it, but I'll joke about it again. I fucking loved, like, the day that whatever it's called, homosexual union, was okayed. Because coming from Tennessee and living in South Florida, my Facebook was 50% those rainbow selfies and 50% Confederate flags.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that was the perfect storm of... things on both sides of the political spectrum, because the rebel flag thing was the fact that the rebel flag became basically banned because of that asshole shot up that black church, right?
Yeah, like the day before.
Yeah, and then the gay marriage thing broke like immediately after that. But that was a very interesting time in politics and identity politics, wasn't it?
I still hold to it. I noticed that people started having less tolerance for the progressive side of the harassment after gay marriage was approved. It was like suddenly like the people that, you know, the majority of people who are like, yeah, okay, let's stick it to them. So they went, oh, well, maybe you shouldn't stick it now that we, you know, it's like the goal was accomplished and now people are getting tired of the weaponization they created, the social weaponization, you know what I'm saying?
What you mean, the political correctness?
Yeah, the political correctness and exactly what, you know, how dare you body shame somebody. Suddenly it's after same-sex union was approved, suddenly after that, people started talking about, oh, this is outrage culture. This is getting too crazy. Safe spaces. This is getting too crazy. We need to start tapping things down. We need to make this a little more sane. Before that, it seemed like, you know, a lot more people on board with let's be more, you know, inclusive. Let's point out every potential, you know, flaw in any sort of story that wasn't about inclusion or diversification.
Fuck Columbus.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
God, right.
And now that, you know, it seems like the big civil rights thing has been accomplished for the millennial generation, now all of a sudden they're like, oh, hey, you guys are a little crazy over there. Or they're getting even crazier. Like some people have been, oh, yeah, I accomplished something. Let's see if I can crank it up to the next level.
That social divide's probably going to be more harmful than economics. Like, there are some people that are just batshit insane about political correctedness. And then some people who, like, eh, whatever. Negative on both sides.
Kind of inclined to agree. I was almost about to agree with you, Chris, until Brian did the fuck Columbus thing in the background. okay, like, I get maybe... I'm kind of okay with, like, we kind of... really don't want to celebrate Columbus as we take a more nuanced view of history, a 15th century warlord who committed atrocities in a manner you might expect from a 15th century warlord. Probably not a guy to lionize and, you know, hold up as a gold standard of behavior. But it's like every year it's some new group of assholes discovers that Columbus was a dick. Like, we know. It's known. And you may have noticed that the holiday has sort of faded from importance on the calendar. At least that's my perception. And I probably deservedly so. We might want to distance ourselves from certain historical figures as we take a more sober look at their record. That's, I mean, can we do that without hypocritically, like acting like we're mortified at the appalling things this guy did, even as we live in the country that kind of became a reality because he did the things he did. I see a hypocrisy there that maybe not everybody does, but.
Well, for me, the thing is, it seems like every bit of history has to be reexamined in a way that I understand whitewashing, okay? But it seems like there's like this pendulum going the opposite way just to discredit anything anyone famous ever did, period. Or, you know, even if the person was a good person, they're going to find something to make it just, you know, to make them an outrageous bigot or asshole or something.
Right. I mean, that's the thing I think that irritates me about the Columbus thing. And in particular, but really about people taking this, you know, high horse view of history in general. If you're an American, you own that shit. Like, if you're an American, it doesn't matter if your family, you know, came over in 1890 or 1920 or 1975. At a certain point, your family decided, you know what, I'm taking part in America. And like it or not, you were signed up as an American at that point. You own that shit too. Like, you don't get to be like, I'm an American, I benefit from everything this country offers, but Columbus and the Founding Fathers and all these other figures from the country's history were horrible assholes. They were, but they are basically your forefathers. So you own their shittiness as much as anyone else. It's like some people want to be above America's shitty history, and they feel like if they make loud enough noise about it, they're demonstrating like, oh no, I definitely don't condone slavery. Well, no shit, nobody does. You're not better. And it's the tone on the internet and the people who try to mount themselves up on this high horse that just pisses me off. God,
I agree, man.
It's worse than political correctness. It's like politically correct grandstanding. Yeah, exactly.
All those English kings who went to war after war after war, they were great guys.
Right. Well, I mean, I don't know. That gets on my nerves. But I want to agree with you, Chris. Like, I want to agree that we've maybe moved past outrage culture, but I still hear about microaggressions when what we really mean is somebody being inconsiderate. I still hear, you know, people in the 21st century, you know, condemning behavior of people 700 years ago, as though you could even measure their behavior by a modern standard. There's just all sorts of, I mean, there's some legitimate protests going on. Like, the Black Lives Matter movement, I think, is fully legitimate, you know, because statistically, if you're a black person, you've got a much better chance of dying at the hands of the police than members of any other group. So that's fucked up. That's legit. But, you know, a guy explaining something to you isn't mansplaining. You know, on the flip side, at least from my perspective, you know, it's just one man's opinion.
I mean, even to continue the Black Lives Matter thing, like, just because you support Black Lives Matter doesn't give you the right to just storm on stage and take over any rally you please.
Oh, you're referring to like when they jumped on stage
just
for Bernie,
knocked aside Bernie Sanders.
Yeah,
who, let's be honest, is probably your best bet for equality.
The defense I heard of that was, well, we're not being heard. Or what was something like, you don't dictate when we're heard, we do, which is, I guess, a pretty good strategy to encourage discourse and to get people to view your movement favorably, in some school of thought.
Yeah, but that's fine, but have your own fucking pep rally or whatever. Like, don't fucking, exactly. You know what I'm saying? Like, who are you, fucking Kanye West, like, coming up here? Like, I mean,
right.
Jesus Christ.
That's the sad thing. Like, the movement has legs and has a legit point of view, but yeah, don't behave in Kanye West style, in a Kanye West manner, in a Westian manner, let's say.
Yes, in a Westian manner. That's fine. Don't be a West. Don't be a Westie.
Yeah, I don't know. It just seems like, thankfully, a lot of course, and as I say this as a white man, I'm not even allowed to say this, but it seems like as a lot of the glaring injustices, at least on paper, are addressed. People are looking for new monsters to battle, and sometimes finding them and sometimes making monsters out of non-monsters. And I think that's where political correctness has gone. And actually, I want to ask you guys something. South Park alluded to this on an episode, like two episodes ago, and it's something I've noticed too. Does this not remind you of the early 90s? We had a full flowering of political correctness then, and I think we're having a second blooming now, it feels like. I think this comes in cycles.
Oh, I think it's totally in cycles, because it's the new generation thinking they did it first.
Oh, right. That totally makes sense, right? Like, okay, yeah, yeah, you're right.
It's people basically hitting college.
Okay, and getting exposed to some what they consider radical new ways of looking at things like nobody else ever has. Right. Cam, you're awfully quiet, man. You trying to duck out on this one?
No, I'm just taking it in. Just taking it in.
I really hope I hope this blows over soon. I mean, I
will for 20 years.
Yeah, so let's see. We've talked about political correctness. We touched on race relations. Definitely talked about economics and got into some political discussion. I think we were just going to shoot the shit tonight, but I think what we've really done is shoot our podcasts in the ass and lost all our listeners.
Shut the bottom of our boat.
This is either proof. No, this episode will either serve as proof that people never listened or proof that people once listened and never will again.
Yeah, right. I mean, look, it's. I think our views are pretty enlightened for, you know, as far as the masses go. And I probably just pissed off the masses even more now.
Damn masses.
On the bright side, if the masses listen, we don't really have a problem.
Our numbers do not show that the masses listen, so. Damn you, masses.
Well, for the two people that listen, you know, we're sorry if we offended you. No, but quite honestly, I mean, I think, look, we're relatively young men, you know. I think for the most part we are well-intentioned, and I think that we, you know, while we all have differing views on things, I think we all can agree that, you know, all of our views are, like, have valid points and should be respected. I think if everyone was like that, the world would be a much different place. The problem comes when you've got these, like, trolls and, like, you know, F this, F that, N word, you know, like, it's like, you know, no one is willing anymore to have a honest discourse or discussion about anything. It's all, you know, keyboard tough guys and trolls and snipers, you know. And, you know, it's like Brian said, you know, a little while back, I mean, I wish more people would talk about this stuff, because instead of, like, oh, we can't talk about that. You know, it's not, you know, being so, you know, so PC or, you know, so microaggressive or whatever.
Yeah.
It just doesn't make sense. You know, more people need to talk about this if anything's going to change.
I don't mind if y'all are wrong.
Well, like, for example, I mean, Brian, be honest. Do you think the rest of us are idiots?
No.
All right. Cam, do you think the rest of us are idiots?
That took a little while for Brian to answer. No, I do not.
Tom?
I was doing the lie detector thing. I was finding the word that I think you are that is not idiots, so I could answer truthfully.
Tom?
Tom would call me an idiot. I totally believe in magic.
I was just going to say, yeah, that would all depend on if any of you consider yourselves spiritual but not religious, and or religious, and or a believer in leprechauns.
I'm an atheist pagan who worships Odin.
Oh, God. You're the worst. No, I don't think you're idiots.
Yeah, and I don't think anybody's idiots either. And we all respect each other. And we can have discussions like this about differing viewpoints. And it's not like we're not going to go tomorrow to the game store to do our board games. And I'm not even going to say a word. I'm just going to give the stink eye to everybody across the room, because all of you don't see the way I see it. No.
Might not play Monopoly with Cam.
Well, I wouldn't play Monopoly anyway, but that's okay.
Right there. See, Cam instantly redeemed himself in a heartbeat. That's the Cam I know. That's the Cam I love. All right. So, you know, that's my point. You know, maybe I'm being naive, because I'm sure most of the internet is just, you know, like you said, keyboard commandos. The guy, hey, nobody knows who I am. I can get away with anything. And, you know, and I think sometimes the keyboard commandos is just like one step away from the asshole who's on the horn in his car. It just seems like when people get behind the car, they feel like they've got their own little safe world and they know nobody on the street knows them. They can, you know, they cut, they do the horn thing. I think the key, it's sort of that same thing that you know, the anonymity just makes them way too bold or makes them, you know, feel like they can play games with people's emotions and stuff like that.
I'm going to spin this one more way if I can cut you off, Chris.
Yeah, sure.
We all on the same team?
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
That's where people, I feel, err in arguing. Cam does not agree with me. That does not make him my enemy. That doesn't mean I have to conquer him or correct him or prove him wrong. We're not the same person. Big deal.
Exactly.
Just remember, if you're Republican, Democrat, whatever, you're on the same team.
Yeah, we're all Americans. We're all, like, you know, working towards the common goal of a better America.
We should be, Ellie.
Yeah. That's why you should vote for Trump.
I was just gonna.
Okay, Donald Trump 2016.
Donald Trump 2016. It'll be a terrific America. Terrific. If you're Mexican, unless you're Mexican.
Making America great again. That's such a good slogan.
And this is a sideline, by the way. One of my pet peeves at the game store. It's usually not at our little board game night, but there are a couple of guys. I can't tell whether they're trying to be serious about overly pushing their viewpoint or whether they're just trolling in real life by saying stuff they know is going to get comments.
Some of them are trolling. Some of them
are idiots.
Are just idiots. Well,
here's the thing. They believe in their heart of hearts that they're just the fucking smartest person in the world and they know best. They're not, like, wicked or idiots or anything like that. They just really believe that they have the answer and that you should be graced with the answer.
But that's not, you know, that's not, you know, in, that's not just in the game store. I mean,
that's, oh, no, that's that. Everywhere.
Yeah, and it goes back to sort of what you were saying. Just because you have a different opinion doesn't mean you need to exert that opinion on someone else and conquer them and make them take your opinion. You know what I mean? It's like, okay, differing opinions. So what? Like, agree to disagree. And typically, you know what, the truth is typically somewhere in the middle anyway, you know, most of the time, as long as it's two rational people having a rational discussion.
Right. When you throw the trolls in, maybe that the middle exactly. is not exactly.
Exactly. That's why I said two rational people having a rational discussion.
No, I caught that conditional statement.
Yeah, being rational, I think when emotions get into it, as well as social maladjustment, it can... It can definitely.
Definitely a lot of that at the game stores.
Yeah. So
not just ours, but many.
Both the game stores in Washington, D.C. seem to be places where grace under the pressure of strong disagreement is not to be found. Sadly.
Very true, man. Very true.
So, guys, with all that said, I don't even think we ever got away from the news. We sort of segued into this pretty deep political conversation. Anything else you guys want to discuss in the way of news, politics, religion, national origin, ethnic discussions, anything else that we could do to alienate any more people before we call it an episode?
Okay, anybody left we didn't piss off?
Yeah, I think we kicked ourselves in the balls enough.
Hey, look, we're not really voting for Trump 2016, or maybe we are, depending on where you come down on that political discussion, so... We neither endorse nor oppose the nomination of Donald Trump for the Republican Party. Right? Is that fair to say?
The Trumpian ticket?
Right.
Listen, let's see who the Democrats trot out first.
Yeah, they had their debate. You know what? The Democratic debate, I'll just say, was a little more pedestrian. It was a lot less sparks flying. And that's good or bad depending on how you view your presidents and your Democrats and your Republicans.
How entertained you want it to be by your politics.
Yeah, I have a hard time. I view Trump as a showman, and I have a hard time still accepting him as a serious political mind. But I felt that way too about, you remember Al Franken, the comedian who became a senator?
Yeah.
You know, he turned out to be a pretty, I mean, I think he's been in the Senate, is it Senate or Congress? I don't know, but he's been in whatever branch he's in for some time, and I haven't heard that he has burnt the place down. So, you know, it's not unprecedented that people have moved from show business and celebrity into office.
If Jesse the Body Ventura could fucking run Michigan or Minnesota.
Right.
I mean, fuck.
Right.
Didn't Al Franken write that book, Rush Limbaugh's A Big Fat Idiot or something like that?
I believe he did. Something like that, yeah.
I mean, like, not that I don't think that that's true. I just, it's funny to me that you can write a book with that title and then become a congressman or whatever he is. It's
yeah. Yeah. He holds elected office. Well, I mean, and, you know, Ronald Reagan was an actor turned president, and Arnold Schwarzenegger was a governor of California, and Hillary Clinton was married to Bill Clinton.
Jesse the Body was in Predator. Awesome movie.
That's true.
What do you guys think of Ronald Reagan? Because he's being like touted, especially in this election cycle, as this like amazing, you know, one of the best presidents we ever had.
I have some respect for him holding it together through the Cold War. That was a pretty big accomplishment. We still have a country. There is still a planet here after some of the scares.
Mm-hmm.
So did a good job there. Not a huge fan of his economics.
Yeah. I mean, but that's the funny thing too, is the economics is what people like. If you, I don't know how closely you guys watch the Republican debates, but like, that was like the biggest thing. It's like, we're going to get back to the Reaganomics, and we're going to get back to, you know, what
trickle,
you know,
down.
What Reagan, yeah. I mean, everyone like not, I mean, I lived through the 80s. Does everyone not remember that? Like, I mean, I lived like next to crack houses in Carroll City, Florida. You know what I mean? Like, that was trickle down economics.
Yeah.
I mean, I love Reagan. Don't get me wrong. I actually am a huge Reagan fan, but I don't know that some of his fiscal policies were the best.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard not to like Reagan personality-wise. He came across as this genial, all-American guy, and he always struck me as a genuine patriot. Like, he really did love the country and love being president and so on. I think for a lot of people, in the wake of the terrible economy over which Jimmy Carter presided, and in the wake of Jimmy Carter, like, either being a doom and gloomer or telling some hard truths, depending on your political persuasion, Reagan was a breath of fresh air to a lot of people, because Carter was like, you know, hey, well, you know, we got to accept that economic growth quarter over quarter forever isn't sustainable. And, you know, maybe we have to tighten our belt a little in the wake of energy crises and, you know, look at solar power. People didn't want to hear any of that. So then Reagan comes riding into town. We're going to build the biggest military ever, and we're going to cut taxes, and we're going to do all these great things. And we're going to, you know, if we stimulate the economy at the top, the wealth's going to trickle down and everybody's going to get rich. It's going to, you know, going to rain money from heaven. He came in with this hopeful message and some policies that, depending again on your political persuasion, you might find sound or not sound. And people remember him fondly, I think, emotionally more than anything. That's my two cents as a unqualified political pundit.
I tend to agree with you on that.
Chris, what about you? You're a big Reagan booster, aren't you?
You know, I was very apolitical back then, it was going through a lot of personal stuff. So, I mean, I only really got into politics, much to my chagrin, here in the past 10, 15 years. But, you know, as far as Ronald Reagan goes, I'm just going to, you know, re-quote one of his quotes here. Diehard conservatives thought that if I couldn't get everything I asked for, I should jump off the cliff with the flag flying, going down in flames. No, if I can get 70, 80% of what I'm trying to get, I'll take that. And then continue to try to get the rest in the future. Just saying.
As opposed to today's gridlock, where like we're getting everything or we're going to burn the whole thing down, right?
So if they're honoring him, I just, you know, wish they would take a little bit more of him than just say, oh, it was a great economy, and then just kind of ignore the things that are inconvenient for them.
Full disclosure, I was watching like Transformers, G.I. Joe, Thundercats, and stuff when he was president, so...
Yeah, I was going to say, I was five, so forgive me my political ignorance.
Yeah, I remember those were fun times in certain ways. But I will not give him credit for any of those cartoons, nor will I say that he necessarily stood in opposition to them. I just know based on, you know, what you see today, people seem to fondly remember the guy. If you take a sober look at what went on in the 80s and what stage was set for later, your view may or may not change. Again, depending on your philosophy. Sadly, your view of reality is very much informed and even shaped by your philosophy in life. Yeah, Ronald Reagan, a president. There you go. That's
a president.
That's our episode title. Ronald Reagan, a president.
I really think it should be Making America Great.
Oh my God. I'll say this. If Trump gets elected, at least it'll be funny. I mean, it might be tragic.
Yeah.
Or it might be amazing. I don't even want to say it's tragic. See, there you go. It looked like I was leaning one way or another. It might be tragic. It might be the beginning of a new golden age in America. But either way, it'll be entertaining.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I, if you ask me in my heart of hearts, I mean, it doesn't matter who gets
it. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't fucking matter, man.
There's what, 592 other assholes we need to change?
Yeah, I mean, it really doesn't matter, man. As long as the fucking guy's not going to cause a fucking nuclear war, like, I mean, it's really the only thing you got to worry about, you know? Everything else is...
You don't think, who's the guy on the left that's... Bernie Sanders. He's kind of a... I don't want to say he's Trump's counterpart on the left, but in a way he is, because he's... As Trump is the outsider to the Republicans, I guess Sanders is the outsider to the Democrats. The difference being that Sanders is not really... a showman, but he seems to be very serious about politics. So, whereas I view Trump as a showman who's less serious.
I mean, what I like about Trump is that, and this is probably the only thing I like about him, is that, like, the guy's a winner. You know what I mean? Like, I tend to, like, just, like, bet on the person rather than the policy or, like, you know what I mean? Like, if I'm investing in a company, I'm not necessarily looking so much at the metrics. I mean, obviously there needs to be a baseline. But you're investing in the person. You know what I mean? And so when I look at Trump, I see a guy that is fucking willing to win at all costs. And that's typically who I would want representing me in most situations, you know? So, like, I mean, and like Chris said, I mean, I'm apathetic towards politics. I couldn't give a shit. I'm probably not even going to vote. But, like, it's just, you know, if like, that's why I said, let's see who the Democrats trot out, because if it's someone who is a fucking mush or someone that, like, is gonna just continue the same fucking cycle of bullshit, then hey, fucking why not take a flyer and throw a fucking fly in the ointment and see what happens?
Trump Sheen 16.
Yeah, I mean, Trump Sheen. But you know what I mean? Like, fuck. I mean, can't be worse, man.
That's kind of what I read, that's what I've been reading. Like, a lot of people share your sentiments, Cam, and that's why you're seeing these kind of improbable candidates on both sides coming in, because, you know, for being the big change agent that he was supposed to be, and I'm not making a judgment call either way on what Obama has and has not accomplished, you know, we're not living in Jetson style sky houses at the end of his presidency, and there was that much enthusiasm at the beginning that I almost would have believed we would be by now. Remember, I mean,
change. There was, I mean, everything, everything was going to change.
I didn't.
Well,
in a lot of ways, it is
different.
It's different. I didn't vote for Obama. I'll disclose that much. Not to say that I'm necessarily anti-Obama, but I didn't vote for him, and still, when he got elected, I felt just a tinge of excitement. Like, you know, maybe this guy really is going to come in and we're going to turn a pretty big page. Mm-hmm. You know, I gave him the benefit of the doubt. And I'm definitely not like a thanks Obama, ruin America type of guy. But at the same time, I mean, I'm not coming away feeling like, you know, the streets are paved with gold at the end of his presidency.
Right.
I wish Obama had read the Reagan quote. Because if he had shot for 76%, I think things would have been a lot different.
Yeah, you think he stuck to his guns a little too rigidly on certain things, Brian?
No, I think he gave too much to begin with. You don't start a negotiation meeting someone halfway.
Oh, you know, I remember hearing this criticism of him as well. So, like, for example, on the healthcare thing, he came in, like, giving concessions from the outset, right?
Amazing quality in him, like, as a person, as a friend, I would admire that. But you need to be hard-ass in politics, man. Like, you're not going to get, hey, guys, let's meet at the table. This is what I want. What do you guys want? Man, we can do this halfway. When they're, like, slavering, like, you're evil! No, no, no! He wound up giving 75%.
Yeah, and for all that, not doing that and making his opponent seem unreasonable. Like, somehow, I think we can agree, regardless of where we stand politically, that the opposition party has been pretty uniformly obstructionist during this guy's presidency.
Oh, for sure.
And nakedly so. And I don't know how that hasn't been pointed out more effectively. Like, guys, I seriously, you know, addressed Congress and wished them a happy Wednesday, and they argued with me that it was actually Tuesday. You know, like...
Obama was a huge missed opportunity, in my opinion, because he did not know how to play politics. He had 2 years experience. He didn't know the game. And if he had had 12 years experience, I think he would have been a great president.
You think? He wouldn't have been more... He would have been jaded and cynical and...
He needed to be jaded and cynical.
Yeah, you don't send the fucking wide-eyed idealist into a fucking den of wolves and expect him to come out with a...
You know what I mean?
You send in the grizzled hunter.
You're right. You know? And I think Obama was a wide-eyed idealist going in. Like, he's still very charismatic and still smiles and gives you a sense that he's a hopeful person. But as every president, he's definitely been worn down by nearly 8 years in service. And yeah, that's a great way to put it. He was not that grizzled hunter going in loaded for bear, as it were.
Mm-hmm. He's got the 1,000-yard stare now.
Yeah.
It's more of like a vacant look of get me out of here. I'm done.
Like, yeah. I almost, if you could just sit and have a totally off the record conversation with him. I mean, I could picture him saying something like, look, I'm not saying I fucking hate Washington, D.C. and running America, but I fucking hate running America.
But I'd rather go back to Chicago and dodge.
Right.
Can't wait for that tell-all book.
Yeah.
Holy shit, a Barack Obama account of the presidency. When I was a community organizer on the mean streets of Chicago, dodging bullets to, you know, provide help for poor people, I had a better time than...
little did I know that I was really going to get fucked up.
God, yeah. So missed opportunity, that's not a bad way to put it. I feel like, yeah, maybe a little more seasoned Obama would have done well. But hey, we've got... the inevitable next president, Hillary Clinton, waiting in the wings. So everything will be okay now.
I mean, Obama is the black Jimmy Carter with two terms.
right.
You know what I mean? Like, a little less bumbling and a little less country, but like, you know, like, I mean, great intentions, probably a great guy, probably, you know, someone who you'd want to be like your grandpa, but like, not a politician.
Too bluntly honest about certain things, and I think people really want to hear what they want to hear from a politician. I mean Reagan promised a lot of shit that he either couldn't deliver on or delivered on by charging things on the credit card for somebody else to pay off later.
Well, I mean, that's what Obama did too, but he just did it way more poorly. I mean, the guy's run up the debt to fucking however many trillion, you know, and has seriously underdelivered, even with that fucking open
That's true.
Checkbook,
and you know? By the way, what happened to that? Remember the debt was like a big thing when Bush was leaving office because he had run up a huge debt, and then...
Wasn't it like single billions then?
Yeah, it was like $7 billion. That's like 17 now.
I think you're looking for trillion there, guys, or some crazy amount. More, yeah.
Trillion. Yeah. Trillion.
Yeah, I mean, billion. You know, basically... Bush ran up the credit card and then Obama took out a home equity loan. But why isn't, remember what a hot topic that was? Nobody seems to care about that anymore. Like, it's like the debt doesn't even exist.
No, I think it's just like people are just ignoring it because it's just so fucking shitty. You know, there's like nothing to do but ignore it at this point. But you know, China, you know, everyone was so gung ho, like, oh, China's going to own us. And you know, they hold all of our debt, and they do hold a lot of our debt, but China's having a big fucking problem themselves. And it's the same fucking problem that we're facing here, is that there, and it's funny to me that like we had this whole conversation about capitalism and like the shrinking middle class, when like in China they're having the exact same problem, but they're communist. They're trying to increase their middle class there, and it's not working. They're having big problems, and they're actually in big trouble for like the next 10 years.
Yeah, they tried to accomplish through their sort of command model what we accomplished through manipulating, the bank policy and that sort of thing. They like, whereas we were like, yeah, look, anybody with a heartbeat and a pulse, take a loan, buy a home. They were like, hey, we're going to build a city. We're building cities. Yeah. So, we order you to build a city and, people are going to live there and and it created this huge bubble where you had all these inputs into the construction industry, but nobody really buying.
I would totally tour one of those though.
Oh God, me too.
Yeah. And they built it all with Chinese drywall. That's fucking,
yeah. It smells like sulfur.
Yeah. It's that kills all fucking electrical components. Yeah.
Oh God. Gross. Yeah, I would like to tour one of those Chinese ghost cities, but yeah, China has backed themselves into a strange corner. And then I also heard they have a huge demographic problem because the one child policy worked too well, so that you have, like we have here, too many retirees to take care of and too few people to take care of them. And they don't have Mexico on their border, so I don't know, they're fucked. Oh, they can't bring people in.
Yeah. Man, that's another fucking topic. We need to fucking institute that one child fucking policy here.
Too damn many of us.
Yeah.
Americans or
Earthicans. Even Americans.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I'm actually an advocate.
I know it's Terran.
our population numbers are, I read by like the end of the century, it's going to be some absurd amount. Like, seriously, have two kids, replace yourself, and then every third couple, you can have a third kid. How's that? We'll have a lottery, but why all the kids? If we can't even feed the people that are here now.
10, 15 fucking kids. Yeah, it's ridiculous. Fucking Duggars.
See, that's gross to me, too. That's a disgusting example, because the Duggars know better. Like, if you're from a part of the world where education and medicine aren't there, and you do a natural human thing and have sex, kids are going to result, and that's it's fortunate or unfortunate, but you can't really help your circumstances. The fucking Duggars, come on, you know how babies are made. What are you doing with 15?
But at least they can support those kids. You know what I'm saying? I mean,
corporate sponsorship.
Yeah, but I mean, look, I mean, fuck, man.
They're not setting a good example, is my point.
Yeah. They're fucking kids, fucking molester.
Yeah, didn't one of the kids molest his sister or some weird shit?
Allegedly molested his sister, and then allegedly was on Ashley Madison and all this other shit.
Well, the good news is there were no women on there for him to molest, so.
Yeah, the guy's a fuck up.
Holy shit, Ashley Madison, like 9 million people and like 3,000 girls.
I think 3,000 is like, generous.
Yeah, so. It was like 1,500, wasn't it?
Some absurdly low number. That's a little bit depressing, because I'll tell you why it's depressing. Not because I'm necessarily in favor of people running around and being dishonest on their spouses, but that kind of flies in the face of women want it just as badly as men. So I'd expect like 50-50, right?
No, it's totally different. If women want it, all they have to do is wear a low-cut dress.
Walk out the door. Exactly.
They don't have to go on a fucking website and impress people.
Okay, see, I don't get that's a whole other... The actual honest discussion of sexual dynamics, absent, feminism and menism and all this other stuff, for all of the rhetoric, it's still pretty obvious to me that men like what women are selling. And I'm not saying that to imply anything untoward, but that still seems to be the way things function. Go to any city, you'll see a dozen strip clubs with naked ladies in them. You can, and one novelty strip club, maybe, with naked dudes. And that's for gay guys to go to. So, yeah, that's another thing we can never be honest about is, like, we're supposed to at once acknowledge and not acknowledge gender differences, right? That's kind of the game we're playing now. Acknowledge them where convenient, totally discard them where not, right?
I don't even know. That's why I just stay silent. It's just like, well, whatever. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like, you know, and that's the other thing too, is I feel like the, much like almost everything else in the world, the day-to-day interaction is never like what the, I guess, so-called pundits or whatever people would have you believe it is. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you work with someone, whether they be black, woman, white, whatever, transgendered, whatever it is, I feel, and maybe it's just because we're smart, enlightened, I feel like, people, like, it's no big deal, you know? Like, it's not a trans woman that I'm working with, it's a woman.
Right.
You know
right.
what I mean? It's not a gay guy that I'm working with, it's a guy. It's not a black guy that I'm working with, it's a guy. You know what I'm saying? Like, it just is what it is. But, like, you know, if you, like, turn on the news or you fucking pick up a newspaper, it's like, they'd have you believe that there's like this like crazy war going on between the races and the genders and the, you know what I mean? Like, it's just, I don't know. It's just, it's so overblown that it just makes it like, it puts, and I guess maybe that's what it needs to like put the proper spotlight on it because things aren't changing fast enough. But I know I'm not fucking going out there discriminating against anyone else, you know, and I don't really know anyone that is either, you know? So it's like, who are these people? I don't know.
It's weird because like identity politics, prejudice, othering of people is all something that really can only exist in the abstract. When you're confronted with a black person, you can't deny their humanity, right? When you think of a black person as this boogeyman out there and you're like, you're a racist who doesn't like them. Yeah, they're out there, they're murdering and they're killing. But then you meet a black person face to face and you, their humanity becomes evident. Like it creates this like total conflict. Like it's basically, that's what you were initially getting at, I think, Cam. Face to face, in person, none of this shit matters. It's only in the abstract when we're back in our little cave and we can abstract away people's humanity and think of people as these amorphous others that the nasty politics comes into it, I guess, or the nasty thinking.
Because 99% of racists are not like, you know, going up to a black dude and being like, hey, N-word or whatever. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're like smiling in their faces and then like talking behind their back with their buddy.
Right.
Or typing away on a fucking keyboard, you know? Whereas, you know, it takes a pretty like, you know, radical 1% of racists to like actually go out and wear a fucking KKK hood or, you know, have a march or something like that. So it's like, yeah, you've got these people that have these views, but they keep them, you know, secret. And they just go about their day. But, you know, to your point, Tom, I mean, that is the sad thing, is that like, even when confronted with that humanity, I think that there still are a lot of people that are like, yeah, they may be nice, quote unquote, to that person in that social interaction, but then they are going back, you know, home and telling their wife, oh, honey, guess what? This N-word told me this. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like,
yeah,
you know,
I think Tom, you're wrong. They can deny that humanity.
Even after, so that's what baffles me. Even after meeting someone face to face.
I think some people, you're right about some people, but I think most racists are just racist. I just don't
see how. I've long maintained that, like, you know, exposure is the cure for racism and exposure is the cure for prejudice, like
xenophobia.
Yeah.
Anything.
Yeah. 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 I hate Jews. Well, you know, go hang out with Jews for like 6 months and you'll probably, you at least won't hate them as much, or at least you'll at least come to understand that there's a few good ones in the world. Like you'll change a little bit, at least I think.
Right.
Maybe I'm a little optimistic. It sounds like you guys don't buy that it's a cure for racism, but.
No. I don't think it's a cure, but I think it definitely helps. And that's why I've always been a huge advocate of travel. I don't think that in this country we travel nearly enough. I mean, I know probably a majority of the people I know don't even have a passport. And that to me is a crime. I mean, when you travel and you see other cultures and other people, you realize that everyone is the same. Like everyone's maybe not the same in terms of like, you know, their culture or whatever and all that stuff, but everyone wants the same thing. Kids want to play and have fun. Adults want to have families and be economically secure and, you know, have their kids come home safe at night. You know what I mean? Like, everyone across the board, 99.99% of the people in the world, while they may be radically different in their religions or their, the, you know, the food they eat or how they look or whatever, they all basically want the same thing. They want a good life. And once you travel and you see that across the board in any country you go to, that drastically changes your view of the world and your view of people in general. Like you said, Tom, no, they're no longer, you know, Muslims in the Middle East are no longer these radical, you know, people towel heads wearing a, you know, right. In the sand. You know what I'm saying? You see that they're just like you. They drive cars and they fucking, you know, they go to the grocery store and they, you know what I'm saying? It's like you realize that your view of the world was so dim compared to what is really going on.
Yep.
And I can say towel head, by the way, because I'm half Muslim. But, you know, like what I'm saying is that it's just like I feel like if people traveled more, like you said, had more exposure to other cultures and other people, they would see that, hey, maybe I don't have to like them. Maybe they don't have to be my best friend. But you know what? They're not that much different than what they, you know, than me. And, you know, I don't need to fucking hate them for that.
Yeah, I mean,
and I think that's all you can ask at this point, you know, is just not, for people not to hate. You don't have to love them, but you shouldn't hate them.
I'll offer as an alternative to those who cannot travel. If you cannot get out there in the world and see people in their, I'll say, indigenous settings in another country, then get ye to a university, because thankfully that's a place where you will be exposed, if not to different people, at least to different ideas and ways of thinking.
Yeah, and hopefully a book.
How about something more basic than that? How about, a student exchange program?
We have that. Not even that. That's the whole idea.
Just fucking, yeah, just go play board games, you know, at a fucking game store, you know?
And
just get out of your fucking little fucking shit shanty and go, you know,
yes.
go interact with the world.
And to your point, open a fucking book.
Yeah, open a book. Play World of Warcraft, for Christ's sake. Just do something. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
like,
I exposure, man. It's most narrow-mindedness, narrow minds are minds that are never forced to expand, really. You know, if you're stuck in your, and I'm not trying to in any way say that it's only rural people or, you know, there's people who, you know, I'm from New York City. It's the best place ever. The rest of the world sucks. Well, you know, you're a narrow-minded idiot. You just happen to be from a big city.
Yeah.
Because I know the stereotype is it's people from, you know, the backwoods, but I've met some very open-minded people who came from very rural backgrounds, so I don't know that that's fair. Point being.
Chris.
What? What? Yeah, exactly. What?
My town did not have a hospital for me to be born in.
Oh, God. Were you born in the back of the car like Ricky Bobby?
No, they had to go to the black town for Brian to be born, but then, hey, then they said racist things about the doctor after. No.
Oh man, it's too many jokes that I could make, but I shouldn't, so I will refrain.
God, I want to too. It was weird that the black doctor wasn't allowed to be in the birthing room with the white mother, but you know, just kidding.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Brian, sorry, sorry.
The black doctor slapped him on the butt, and there was a KKK rally in the front of the hospital. Broke out.
We don't want no black people delivering our white babies. Well, we don't have any
slapping our babies.
Okay, what if the doctor delivers the baby, but we have a white nurse slap it? Well, I guess that'll be all right. See, we have some compromise.
We're getting to some common ground here.
Sorry, Brian. I feel that. Coming from a nominally southern state, I'm allowed to have a little fun at the expense of southern Americans, but I do not mean to. I apologize if I offended you just now.
No.
Oh, gosh.
Too much, man.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's turned out to be kind of funny. So I hope the audience understands that we are, we mean no harm. And
Yeah, this is the bizarro universe.
Yes. We are not, by any stretch of the imagination, politically correct or particularly sensitive, but neither are we malicious, I think it's fair to say. And in most episodes, we actually don't talk about this stuff. So this was our, like, finally, I think bringing in a lot of the stuff we BS about before and after the show and in our personal time, we're laying it down for posterity.
It's just a glimpse. Yeah, it's just a glimpse into the lives of the Nerdstravaganza crew.
Yes.
Whether it is a, you know, good glimpse that you want to keep looking at or a, you know, burn my eyes out glimpse, that's for you to decide, but
That is so fucking funny. That is what I wanted to bring up. God damn it.
What?
The body identity disorder woman who fucking poured bleach in her eyes to blind herself.
What?
Did you guys hear about that?
I didn't even know that. I actually really would like to like read that article because I know a lot of people who would want to hear that.
Wait, she burned out her own eyes? Why?
This is such cutting edge that I don't even know how to be politically correct about it. She has a psychological disorder that's not transvesticism or transgenderism or anything like that. It's transableism. She was born with perfectly functioning eyes, and her entire life she felt like she should be blind.
Oh my God, so she blinded herself?
So she went to a psychologist or a psychiatrist to help deal with this, and he poured fucking bleach in
her eyes. Whoa, what? The doctor did it?
Yes.
No. No way.
What? Her I don't know if the guy had a PhD or whatever. Here, I'll link the article, because this is exactly, I really did want to bring this up.
In Canada.
Dreamed of being blind, had drain cleaner poured in her eyes by a sympathetic psychologist to fulfill her lifelong wish. Now she's never been happier. What?
Body Integrity Identity Disorder, BIID. It's the new trans. It's not transsexual, it's transableism.
Okay, I mean, guys, I'm sorry. I think we found a line. Like, no. Like, this is...
Yeah.
Perfectly functioning eyes. I mean, they could have at least plucked them out and given them to someone, like, surgically, who wanted to see. She just fucking poured drain cleaner in them.
No, that's horrible. I'm sorry. Like,
read the article. People do this shit all the time. Like, people like pour liquid nitrogen on their legs to destroy them.
Yeah, I've seen that.
What?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Tom, you feel like you should not have a functioning right leg. You feel like you are paraplegic or amputee or whatever. Like, and I'll be honest with you, like, I don't know if I can be politically correct about this, because on one hand, I am fucking outraged, but it's become okay to chop off a perfectly functioning penis.
Oh.
And I kind of agree that it's okay to do that. Like, this line confuses me.
That's very interesting. That might be an interesting thought to ponder as we approach the finish line for this episode, because... Yeah, like, I guess it's your body, as long as you're not harming yourself or others. But is pouring bleach in your eyes harming yourself? I would say yes. But then again, I guess you could make the argument that is, you know, chopping off your penis and having some anatomical reconstruction a form of harm. I don't know. You know, if she'd gone to a surgeon and had her eyes removed surgically, would that have been better?
Maybe I'm not as progressive as I think, because I don't think so, man. I can't imagine crippling yourself.
But I mean, if you're talking about like gender reassignment surgery, they're not chopping it off and throwing it away. They're just reconfiguring it to make
it's a different shape. You're right. It's still functional.
Yeah.
To make you who you are, you know, who you
like,
are. You know what I mean?
Right. Exactly, like
make you the gender that you know were born.
The trans person is saying,
or should have been born.
I want to be a fully intact, whole, and functional human being. I was just born into the wrong gender.
Right. So fix it, and they fix it. So like, just they're just, you know, they're just fixing the they're just fixing the whatever. You know what I'm saying? I'm not trying to be insensitive. They're just fixing the, I guess, the improper equipment. Right. Redoing.
Sure.
Justified my outrage at the IID.
Yeah. Well, as opposed to hacking it off and throwing it in the bin. You know what I mean?
But
they're not just pouring like fucking acid on it and melting it away.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I suppose if you wanted to make an argument against it, so you're a psychologist, a person walks in, hi, you know, my name's Tim, but I identify as Tammy and I want to be a girl. He walks in, and then right after, or sorry, she, Tammy, walks in, a genetic male who really has identified as a woman her whole life, And then this other lady walks in like, hi, I'm blind. Oh, no, you're clearly not. Following the same rationale, the psychologist should agree that, you know, Tim is actually Tammy and should agree that, you know, Bethany is actually blind, right? I mean, whose assertion is more valid given physical and biological facts that contradict the assertion, you know?
Yeah, where's that line? I mean, you know, you're exactly right. If someone's telling you that they're female when they were born anatomically a male, why is that any different than someone coming in and saying, well, you know, I was born able-bodied, but I should be paralyzed from the fucking waist down?
Yeah.
It really, and again, I admit that this is kind of judgmental. It really terrifies me that people are just mutilating themselves functionally. Like, I'm not saying, like, a penis is mutilating or anything like that. Again, I get that. I get understanding, like, you know, you want to be someone else. I accept that, and I have accepted that. But acid on your eyes, like, horrifies me.
Well, here's Heartless Cam once again. I mean, look, you want to pour acid in your fucking eyes? Fucking have at it, man. As a matter of fact, I got a coupon for you. But you know what? Like, as long as you don't go to the fucking government and ask for fucking benefits because now you're blind.
Oh, I absolutely.
You know what I'm saying?
That.
Like, if you want to fucking blind yourself, that's fine. But I'm not paying a fucking dime to fucking close, you know, to fucking put some, you know, whatever, to retrofit your house because now you're blind or whatever. Or fucking build you a fucking wheelchair ramp because, you know, you wanted to fucking burn your legs off with liquid nitrogen or whatever. Or freeze your legs off.
Dude, that is just... I don't know. I think the line is that you're making it more difficult for you to actually function. I know that may mean that you have to make kind of an arbitrary distinction, but I am definitely not comfortable with somebody walking in saying, like, I hate my left leg. I've hated it my whole life. Take it off. Like, I don't think any doctor should be allowed to do that. And I certainly don't think the psychologist should have been allowed to pour bleach in someone's eyes. You know, do that shit to yourself, I guess, but. I what do you think? Do you think the psychologist should be in trouble for this?
I don't, again, know what license or degree psychologists
PhD.
Have, but she should not be practicing medicine in any way, shape, or form.
A psychologist would have like a PsyD, which is like a non-medical degree. They're not allowed to prescribe medicine, and they are not allowed to perform medical procedures, which is the closest thing.
How this is not prescribing bleach, I don't get.
Yeah, I don't think, like, I'm not allowed to pierce your ears, I don't think. Am I even without some kind of a permit or license?
Certificate, yeah, you're right. I mean,
so I don't see how that's okay. Wow. Good point, Brian. Something to think about. Where's the line? At what point does your image of self override care of self, I guess?
All because Cam just chose that phrase.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, guys, I think we have trod all controversial ground possible. Chris, you've been quiet. You get disconnected?
No, I'm here. I just don't really know how to respond to all that, to be honest.
Chris, you're a nurse, man. What do you think about that? Like, your eyes, man.
Well, now that you've outed me... How would you think a nurse would respond to a concept like that? I can't even fathom it. You know, we're here to help and make people feel better or healthier or in their time of their final days, make them feel more comfortable. But yeah, no.
Yeah, that's my reaction too, man. Oh God. All right. Well,
I'm just surprised that guy is still practicing if he is at all. So I just...
Yeah, I don't...
Can't be.
Hope not.
Can't be. I hope, yeah.
Well, I've unsubscribed from the Nerdstravaganza podcast after this episode, so... I think we can bring this one... We found the finish line at this point, guys. Thanks for kind of shooting the breeze with me today about a wide range of controversial and alienating topics.
Let us know what you think.
Do let us know what you think by emailing us at nerdstravaganza@gmail.com, which Cam will also repeat as we move into our closing remarks. We will return to form next week with a more nerdy topic, but we do appreciate you listening. And I will remind our former listeners that if they want to come back into listenership with us, they're welcome to do so at any time. And we highly encourage them to subscribe to us on iTunes, where this episode accepted. We definitely appreciate maximum stars and favorable reviews. And if iTunes isn't your thing, why not check us out on Stitcher?
Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter and Instagram, plus one us to your Google circle, and join the Nerdstravaganza HQ group on Facebook, where I am sure the comments will be.
Head on over to our website, nerdstravaganza.com, where you can find this and all of our back episodes. Hop on over to YouTube, where you can type in Nerdstravaganza into the handy-dandy search bar and find all of our video content. And then shoot us an email at nerdstravaganza@gmail.com and let us know what you think of this or any other episode.
And with all that said, Chris, take us away.
I don't know any of these guys. At all.
A wise disavowal.
Yeah, right.
Cam, I'm sorry if you're religious and I'm offending you, or if you believe in ghosts, trolls, witches, goblins, unicorns, centaurs, manticores, etc. I apologize.
Or if you've been disconnected by our god technology.
Oh boy, we might have lost Cam. That's what we get. Now the Minotaur that runs the internet just gored the... or the networking hardware that kept us connected. They don't believe.